Money Talk.
This is Akashvani. In the program Money Talk, now we bring a discussion on renewable revolution. India achieves 50% non-fossil fuel electricity milestone. The participants are Suman Chandra, Director, Ministry of New and Renewable Energy, and Niharika Bhuvania, Anchor.
Good evening and welcome to Money Talk. You're with me, Niharika, and this evening we talk about a landmark that India has achieved in terms of its energy transition journey. India has reached 50% of its installed electricity capacity from non-fossil fuel sources, 5 years ahead of the target set under its nationally determined contributions to the Paris Agreement. Let's talk about that. We're in conversation with Ms. Suman Chandra, Director, Ministry of New and Renewable Energy this evening. Good evening, Ms. Suman. Thank you so much for joining us on Money Talk.
Thank you, Niharika.
Let's first begin by deconstructing the term non-fossil fuel capacity, because to a layman, it might sound like a lot. So what do you essentially mean when you say non-fossil fuel capacity?
So let me start with the basics. For any civilizational development, we need energy, and that energy has different sources. So far, most of the civilizations have grown on fossil-based energy, which is the energy which is coming from either crude oil or coming from coal. When we talk about non-fossil energy, we talk about sources like solar, wind, hydro, we talk about nuclear, which do not render any emissions in the environment and therefore are called non-fossil because they are renewable in nature, and also they are not emitting as much carbon or are emitting almost zero carbon in the environment. So that is non-fossil for you.
Sure. And India has achieved a landmark in its energy transition journey. So we've reached 50% of our installed electricity capacity, 5 years ahead of the target set. If you can just shed some light on the original target, I think we may be able to understand this landmark better.
So internationally, when countries came together under the United Nations Framework for Climate Change Convention, there was a Paris Agreement that came into force in 2015. And the Paris Agreement talks about nationally determined contributions. So basically, every country, based on its space and based on its resources, can pledge certain climate action which it's going to take in order to reduce emissions and also to enable a livable planet for the future generations. So as a part of that nationally determined contribution, which we talk about in terms of NDC, our original NDC was pledged in 2015, and we talked about installing 40% of renewable energy by 2030. But we achieved that in 2021 itself, which is like 9 years in advance. Therefore, we thought that perhaps we can crank up our ambition a little more. So in 2022 August, we submitted to the UNFCCC an updated NDC. There in our updated NDC, we talked about now cranking up this target from 40 to 50% by 2030. And that 2030 target, which we were supposed to achieve, that is 50% non-fossil installed, we have achieved this June, which is again 5 years in advance. So this is a big achievement for India.
Understood. Well, now I think we have great perspective on what this actually means. And I'm sure a lot of work has gone on in the background, right? So for instance, the Prime Minister's Surya Ghar Muft Bijli Yojana, the solar park development of National Wind, solar hybrid policy, all of this must have played a great role in achieving this target ahead of time. Would you quickly want us to walk through that?
See, anything that gets done because there's a vision, there are metrics to measure it, and there are policies to support it. So all this achievement of 50% non-fossil has been achieved because we had, you know, a stable policy environment within a very robust vision of a long-term net zero, 2047 Viksit Bharat, 2030 NDC goals. So that enabled us to also create a policy environment that supports capacity expansion, that allows for renewable energy consumption, that allows for creating demands through schemes like, you know, PM Surya Ghar, like you mentioned. Then in the agricultural sector, you have PM Kusum. Then for the hard-to-abate sector, we have green hydrogen. In the wind sector, we have, you know, onshore and offshore wind. In the agriculture sector, again, we have biogas and biomass. So all these schemes and policies mixed together, apart from regulatory mandates like renewable energy consumption and your renewable purchase obligations, has created a scenario in the country which is so positive and which propels the manufacturers, the developers, the financiers to sort of jump into this vision of the Honorable Prime Minister.
In fact, it's such a holistic outlook. It's not just about the numbers that we achieve, but also inclusive growth. And I'll get to that in a while. Before that, I need to ask you about the Pradhan Mantri Kisan Urja Suraksha Evam Uthan Mahabhyan, because that has played a significant role in empowering farmers as well.
Yes. So, as you know, that agricultural emissions that happen are largely sustenance emissions. That is because of the food production, and we share the largest population in India. So we always had a vision as to what is the way that we can best decarbonize the agricultural sector. PM Kusum scheme is one of the most unique global schemes, I would say, that looks at the end-to-end decarbonization of the agriculture sector. I'll explain how. So it has three components. Component A, whereby you allow the farmers to use their barren lands to set up small solar plants. Mm-hmm. They can sell the electricity that they generate to the grid. From that, they can earn income. They can also lease their land to developers who in turn can set up the plants for them, and then they can get the rental income. So from the barren land that the farmer has, he can earn income. Additional income provision is available apart from, you know, having a solar crop plus his own crop in the other field. Then component B talks about the de-dieselization of the farm sector. So last survey, when it was done, we had almost 1 crore diesel pumps that were operating in the country. So the scheme also talks about de-dieselization of the farm sector, where the diesel pumps would be replaced by the solar pumps. The component C, which is the most significant part of the scheme now and which is also gaining a lot of traction from the state, talks about solarizing the whole grid. You know, you have agricultural load. So if you look at the entire load of different sectors on the electricity demand, so there is 18-20% load that comes from agriculture. So the farmers would go to the field, they will get intermittent electricity. Sometimes the electricity will come in the night. This component, feeder level solarization, solves all those problems because the farmers get assured daytime reliable electricity supply that is generated from solar, and all the agricultural activities shift to the daytime hour. So that frees up the grid, first of all. And secondly, it frees up a lot of the agricultural subsidy that the states have to routinely give for catering to this sector. So it's like a win-win for all.
Understood. And since we're on the subject of subsidy and how it frees up the grid, I would like to go to a slightly different side of it, which could be foreign direct investment. Well, since we're on a detailed discussion on the non-fossil fuel sources of generating electricity, let's listen to what Honorable Union Minister of New and Renewable Energy, Prahlad Joshi, has to say on the matter.
The largest recipient of global energy development finance is India, attracting $2.4 billion, that is 20,400 crore for the clean energy in single year. Foreign direct investment in the sector has crossed 1.6 lakh crore, nearly about 20 billion since 2020. In 2023 alone, it touched 42,000 crore, that is 5 billion, which is almost twice the pre-COVID levels. We are now hopeful of auctioning 50 gigawatt of renewable capacity every year. This includes guaranteed 10 gigawatt of wind annually. These auctions offer long-term clarity and transparency and exactly the confidence that investor needs.
And now let's listen to a report on the 7th Regional Committee meeting of International Solar Alliance in Colombo, Sri Lanka, by Prasar Bharati Special Correspondent from Colombo, Dr. Ahmed Muin Farooqi.
The 7th Regional Committee meeting of the International Solar Alliance for Asia and the Pacific got underway today in Colombo, Sri Lanka. The event will formally be inaugurated tomorrow by the Prime Minister of Sri Lanka, Dr. Hirani Amarasuriya, and the Director General of ISA, Ashish Khanna. Running until July 17th, the meeting brings together government officials, think tanks, and private sector leaders to boost solar cooperation across this diverse region. With the theme Advancing Solar Cooperation Across a Region of Diversity and Opportunity, the event is chaired by Sri Lanka and focuses on building regional solar platforms, mobilizing finance, and scaling emerging technologies like green hydrogen and energy storage. ISA's Director General Ashish Khanna said that the region lies at the heart of the global energy transition and emphasized the need for practical investment-ready solutions. The meeting will also see signing of country partnership frameworks and agreements with international organizations.
India's clean energy revolution is as much about inclusive growth and social justice as it is about reducing emissions. Tell us about this. And when we say inclusive growth and social justice, what are we really referring to?
if you look at the frameworks of inclusive growth, justice, fairness, equity, these are the words that are commonplace. Mm-hmm. When you look at these frameworks in the global parlance, then you have sustainable development goals where, you know, SDG 7 talks about clean and modern energy access to all. SDG 13 talks about climate action. SDG mm-hmm. 17 talks about partnerships that will propel it. So these are the global frameworks for sort of, you know, advancing equity. Within the Indian scenario itself, see, all these schemes like PM Surya Ghar, PM Kusum, Biogas, these are to connect all the people who do not have access to clean energy. So we look at both the grid component and the off-grid components. There are still hamlets which might not be connected. So for them, we have, you know, off-grid solutions whereby off-grid pumps are serving so many underserved farmers. Similarly, with those kind of things, DRE is also possible. That is decentralized renewable energy, which can run appliances like chaff cutter for farmers and dryers, mm-hmm. cold storages. So this is a way to make the energy, not just the energy, but the clean and modern energy accessible in the nooks and corners of the country. Another economic argument about creating equity is bringing down the cost. So now the cost itself of the renewable energy is propelling its growth, right? Tariffs have gone down so drastically over last couple of years that it makes more economic sense if you want to improve the efficiencies of the market to sort of deploy the renewable energy at scale in length and breadth of the country. So that is what, you know, like the question is enlarging the pie so that we have enough to share with everybody.
I think we're almost at the end of this discussion, but before we sign off, two very important questions. Since discussion about AI is everywhere, I am sure it has to fit into our discussion about power grids and installed capacity. And AI is something which also requires huge compute power. In the future, is that going to create any sort of conflict in terms of achieving our goals or maintaining the goal that we have already achieved? And second, what does the next phase of India's energy transition look like?
So to your first question, AI and our renewable energy goals, I think it's a good thing AI is coming, right? Because the demand forecasting becomes easy. The Internet of Things allows you to, you know, balance your grid, allows you to forecast where the demand is coming from, what ramp up and ramp down is required. So AI for good is a good proposition that is available to us as a technological advancement, which we can leverage for the progress of the sector. But your nuanced question of the amount of electricity that they are going to consume, I feel that India is very well endowed with solar power and a little bit about wind also. And we feel that we should be able to meet it, even if we have to do it from very clean sources. So that endowment and that gift from the God enables us to trigger that kind of growth in this sector. To your second question, which was regarding the next phase of our energy transition. So now that we are sitting on a 50% installed non-fossil capacity, what should the future look like? So you will get a constant pushback in terms of renewable energy being variable. But that's only an opportunity I see for installing more and more battery. So I think the next phase of our energy transition should look like integrating a lot of battery energy storage system with our renewable energy to make it firm and dispatchable. Then to enable a robust grid, because the strength of the grid is what determines the, you know, stability of the power sector. So investment in modernization of the grid using all the AI and the Internet of Things to make it more robust. Then ramping up our transmission power, that is something that we will continue to work on. And then most importantly, to do innovation in the power market itself with having tariffs that speak to the day of the time, those kind of attributes. So I think the future of energy transition looks very, very promising. And it's actually a joy to be a part of this transition.
Before I sign off, I would just like to make one small comment here. I think as a country, we are also blessed with different kinds of resources in different states. We are blessed with a great coastline. We are blessed with great solar power, like you mentioned. I think that should only make the journey more joyful and easier, if I can put it that way. Well, on that note, thank you so much for joining us this evening on Money Talk. It was a pleasure deconstructing this new goal that we've achieved and understanding more about, you know, how we've put non-fossil sources to our best use.
Thank you so much, Niharika.
You were listening to a discussion on renewable revolution. India achieves 50% non-fossil fuel electricity milestone. The participants were Suman Chandra, Director, Ministry of New and Renewable Energy, and Niharika Bhumania, Anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani.
Money Talk.